Welcome to Radio Sefarad's English Corner. I'm your host, Linda Jimenez, bringing news and other features of Jewish interest to Radio Sefarad's English-speaking audience in Spain and around the world. Our trivia question for this week is, about how many oral histories has the Milken Archive recorded, and who have they interviewed for them? This week we're speaking with Jeff Janesco, the curator of the Milken Archive of Jewish Music. The Milken Archive was founded in 1990 to document, preserve, and disseminate the vast body of music that pertains to the American Jewish experience. Since then, it's become the largest collection of American Jewish music ever assembled, roughly 600 recorded works, more than 500 of them world premieres. Additionally, the Milken Archives collection contains over 800 hours of oral histories, nearly 50,000 photographs and historical documents, thousands of hours of video footage from recording sessions, interviews, and live performances, and an extensive set of program notes and essays that illuminate the music's historical and cultural context.
Thank you very much for speaking with us today, Jeff. Could you first tell us what the Milken Archive is?
My pleasure for speaking with you. I want to thank you for taking the time to speak with us. The Milken Archive is a collection of media that documents the American Jewish experience through music. That media includes audio recordings, it includes oral histories, it includes videos, and it includes a lot of writings, essays, liner notes, and things like that. It's a collection that spans from the earliest years of Jewish settlement in North America, that is, before the Declaration of Independence, and stretches right up to the early 20th century.
So then, obviously, it's not only audio.
No. We have, well over 800 hours of oral histories that we've recorded. Those are all on video. We also documented many of the recording sessions that we've done.
But I mean, if it goes back to before the revolution, then it's obviously not all audio. I mean, they didn't have audio
right.
in those days.
In many cases, you know, the music that we recorded was before the revolution. We made a new recording of the music, but it's of a liturgical tradition that is very, very old.
Oh, okay. Can you tell us first about the archive itself, when it was founded and by whom and who had the idea?
Yes, the Milken Archive was founded in 1990 by Lowell Milken. Lowell is a successful businessman and a philanthropist. He is also a great music lover and an avid reader of history as well. It was really through his involvement with various synagogues and cantors in the Los Angeles area that he came to realize that there was a lot of music of Jewish significance that had been composed and had maybe been performed a couple of times, but had never been recorded. And he perceived that this music was well, one, not widely known, and two, would most likely be lost to future generations. So he founded the Milken Archive, first and foremost, to record and preserve this music for the future, but also to make it more widely known.
How do you make it more widely known?
By making the recordings and distributing them internationally. So we have a distribution deal with the Naxos of America record label, and they have worldwide distribution. So when we were pressing CDs, those were being sold all over the world, and now we're doing everything only digitally, but our music is available on iTunes, on Spotify, on all of the major internet retailers. So part of it is just getting the music out there.
In your mission statement, you say that your aim is to document, preserve, and disseminate the vast body of music that pertains to the American Jewish experience. Could you define the American Jewish experience?
Sure. Defining terms in the realm of Jewish life and culture isn't always too simple. We prefer the term music of the American Jewish experience because it's a little broader and more inclusive, and it avoids some of the traps associated with the term Jewish music, which people can't seem to agree exactly on what that means. By American, we mean any composer who is American by birth, or any composer who immigrated here or spent a significant amount of time in America. So, for example, we have quite a lot of music by European composers like Darius Milhaud and Ernest Bloch, both of whom were born in Europe and came to the U.S. to escape the war. Bloch remained here for the rest of his life. Milhaud eventually returned to France, but he lived in California for many years, and he taught at Mills College, where he influenced many composers, students of his. And he also received commissions from many American Jewish institutions. There are also a lot of American composers who have composed works on Jewish themes, sometimes because they were commissioned to do so, and sometimes because they were inspired to do so for personal reasons. For the second part of the question, the Jewish part, I guess I could kind of define that in the positive and in the negative. I guess for the positive, we mean that the music should demonstrate some sort of connection to Jewish content or context. So we have music that was composed for sacred services or ritual purposes, music that might draw on folk sources or cantillation traditions. We have dramatic works like operas and oratorios that are based on, you know, Jewish historical episodes or folk tales. I should point out that we have a few works by non-Jewish composers as well. The most prominent ones being Dave Brubeck and one short movement of a collaboratively composed piece by Igor Stravinsky. So what we are not is an archive of Jewish composers. The music has to be demonstrably Jewish in some way, even though we understand that there can be some ambiguity in defining it that way. Oh, I was just going to point out that the term American Jewish experience is also meant to highlight the uniqueness of America. We understand America as a very diverse place, and that Jews that immigrated here from, say, the Pale of Settlement, or even from Brazil, where the first American Jews came from, they experienced great freedoms here. In most cases, freedoms that they did not enjoy in the places they came from. So this confluence of Jews and the traditions they brought with them and the freedom of the American environment really fostered a lot of artistic achievement. So we understand that Jews brought their traditions and their experiences here, but that they were also shaped by what they experienced here, and that being here affected their relationship to those traditions.
You have spoken a lot about composers. So is the music that you've collected composed music, or do you also include folk music, either folk music that originated, let's say, in the United States, or that came to the United States from other places with these Jewish immigrants?
Yeah, we have primarily documented music that has been composed, as people understand that in the traditional sense. We do have some music that kind of came from the reform movement of the 1960s by people like Debbie Friedman and Jeff Klepper. It's very folk in style, although the music is very much composed. We have, songs from the American Yiddish theater and the Yiddish radio scene of the early 20th century. Again, that it's more in the popular realm. But these are not quote unquote oral traditions that we have documented as they've developed in America.
How do you choose what to include?
The repertoire was determined by an editorial board that was formed in the mid-1990s that included a couple of composers, it included some cantors, scholars, a couple of broadcasters, people who were experts in classical music. They really worked together to determine the repertoire that they thought was worth documenting, and also to determine the way it would be programmed. I don't know if you're aware of our 20-volume structure, so we present all of our repertoire kind of according to themes. Themes like cultural themes or historical themes or musical themes. We have a volume that deals with the early American experience of the colonial era. We have a volume that would look at how composers were inspired by Hasidic traditions and that sort of thing.
Can you tell us about the oral histories that you briefly mentioned?
Sure. That's actually it's really a really big part of what we have done, but it doesn't necessarily look like a big part of what we've done because we have focused so much on releasing the music. But part of our mission of documenting this music was also to document the history of Jewish music in America and the lives of the people that helped to shape it. So we interviewed many of the composers whose works we recorded. We interviewed several actors and singers who were part of the Yiddish theater scene of the early 20th century. We recorded oral histories with many important cantors and performing artists. We were fortunate to have interviewed Theodor Bekel not long before he died. We have a wonderful life history with the composer Herman Berlinsky, if I can give one example. Berlinsky was born in Leipzig and studied in Paris. He very narrowly escaped the Second World War. He came to America. He was a pianist and a composer, but he kind of faked his way into a job as an organist at an influential synagogue. He had never played the organ, but he sort of figured out how to fake it enough in order to get a job. And then went on to get a doctorate from the Jewish Theological Seminary and had a very distinguished career here. When the Melkin Archive recorded some of his music, we recorded in Berlin, and he was there at the session, and he was, you know, speaking in German with the musicians and the singers, and he was coaching the singers on how to sing in Hebrew. And the comment that he made at the end of the session was that it pays to have lived this long. He just thought it was really, really amazing to be able to return to the country of his birth, from which at one point he was a refugee, and then to have it was the piece we recorded there was his favorite and most important work. So that's just one example. We have recorded a total of about 160 oral histories. Most of them have not been made available to the public, but I'm hoping to make more progress on that in the near future. It's one of my priorities for the coming years.
The third part of your mission is to support and encourage the development of research and educational materials that will foster a broader understanding of the artistic, historical, social, and cultural forces at play in the world of Jewish music. That's a mouthful. How do you do this?
I think there are many ways we do this. First, we've put a lot of effort into getting our material online and making it as accessible as possible to the broadest audience possible. So the first step is really making people aware of what we have. And we put a fair amount of effort into marketing, online and through our email distribution list and things like that, with the fairly minimal budget we have. We hope that people who listen to our music will be maybe inspired to perform it, or maybe be inspired to compose Jewish music of their own. So in some senses, we hope to be a catalyst, and we do often hear from people who have listened to something from our collection and want to perform it for a concert or for a service or something. Something else we do is reach out to cantors and university professors and Jewish educators just to let them know what we have to offer and to encourage them to look into how they might be able to use that in their teaching. And we do hear from people fairly frequently who say that they do use our materials in their teaching, and they're very appreciative of the work we've done. Finally, I'd say we're in the early stages of planning a formal curriculum. So this would be something that could be used in different educational contexts and would be a fairly specific and kind of rigorous curriculum that would incorporate the music we've recorded and a lot of the documentation we've put together. But that would incorporate things from outside the Melkin Archive as well. I want to emphasize that history is important. It's important to all of us, and we've been pretty meticulous about documenting the history of this music. But our founder, Lowell Milken, likes to refer to the project as a living archive. So he's not interested in simply documenting the past. He really feels that the Milken Archive should provide a path forward and should be a kind of catalyst for helping music remain a central part of the American Jewish experience.
And all of the music is only available online, right?
We do have CDs available. Close to half of our music was originally released on CD. It was released kind of in the mid-2000s as the music world was going through this major shift from physical to digital. So we do have things that are available on CD and on our website. You can, if you're interested in only CDs, you can actually look at our albums page and see what we have on CD. But everything that we have is available online on all the major digital service providers.
As curator, what do you do specifically?
Yeah, I guess it's a position which, as they say, in which one wears many hats. My primary responsibility has been the website. And I've helped lead that transformation from a physical medium to the digital world. I also helped design and lead the effort to develop our new website, which we just launched in September. And I'm working with our web producer to try to create user experiences that will really help bring the music and the history to life. This is probably where the curator title applies most. I try to make the material accessible and engaging while still keeping it academic. You know, most of the music and the liner notes, most of this was done before I became involved with the Milken Archive. So I'm taking a little bit of a different approach than the people who were originally involved in recording the music and in writing the notes and what have you. I'm also the point of contact for anyone who calls or emails, people like you. I get contacts from conductors and cantors, musicians, synagogues. You might be surprised by the types of questions and the amount of people I hear from. Help people find music sometimes, even if it's something we don't have. Or something, I hear from people on occasion who, you know, maybe had a great-grandfather or something who was a cantor and are looking for, you know, more information and wondering if we have anything that might pertain to what they're looking for. I occasionally get to interview people. I interviewed the composer David Amram recently. I got to interview the granddaughter of Mario Castelnuovo Tedesco last year, and we've delved into the podcasting world a bit in the past year or so. So most of the interviews I've done, I've turned into podcasts that you can hear on our website or you can hear on SoundCloud. And I combine, you know, a little bit of me providing some introductory material and asking some questions. And I include some musical excerpts. And then I include, you know, a lot of the responses that I get from the people that I interview.
Is there anything else you would like to add that we might have left out?
Yeah, I'd like to encourage people to find us on Facebook, to find us on Twitter. We're also on Spotify. We're on SoundCloud. We're on YouTube. We try to be pretty active in the social media realm. You can listen to all of our music on Spotify, the streaming service that most people know about. We're also on iTunes. We're on Amazon. I'd like to say to visit our website, sign up for our email list. That's www.milkenarchive.org. We have just so much content that's available on the web. And we send out a newsletter twice a month that highlights, you know, particular aspects of the archive. So it's a good way to get acquainted with what we do. You can also contact us if you're looking for something or even if you just want to say hi. And I'd like to also add that we recorded a lot of our music in Spain. So
really?
We're very happy to have the opportunity to speak directly to your audience. We recorded several of our Yiddish theater songs there. We recorded some cantorial pieces there and also a very intense cantata about the crypto Jews we recorded with the great soprano Ana Maria Martinez. We recorded with the great conductor Jorge Mester in the Barcelona Symphony. So we're grateful to have this opportunity to reconnect with the wonderful people of Spain.
Well, thank you very much.
Thank you, Linda.
Well, that's it for this week. As always, we'd love to hear from you. So please email us any comments or suggestions or questions you'd like us to answer on the air. Our address is EnglishCorner@RadioSephirod.com. See you next week.